Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong. It's bringing mercy. It won't be long.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy Monday to spend it with me on The Cross in the Desert. Well, this will be an incredibly busy week for most of us. Thanksgiving holiday is always a big cooking spree in the kitchen for mom, but I think mom and dad should be in there together, because mom works hard all week and she needs the day off, right? Well, this is a time of year where we really give thanks. Of course, for us as Christians, giving thanks to God is a daily thing. But this is a national holiday of giving thanks to God for everything he has provided for us, for being thankful for our freedoms, for being thankful for being alive and prosperous. And immediately when I think of Thanksgiving, I'm also thinking of my dear friends in Iran and the difficult lifestyle they have to live every day under this dictatorship regime. And so I want to take some time today to give thanks to God for my dear Iranian friends and pray for them to know the hope and the peace and the freedom that I have here living in the United States. Well, we're going to talk today about several things. The first on the platter is about the stalemate in the nuclear negotiations between the United States and Iran, and what has basically happened in this facade, that's what I call it, in this facade, is that we have gotten no concessions from Iran. Iran has not conceded anything in these meetings, and so we're at a stalemate, as I mentioned. And what has happened as a result of this stalemate is, in spite of it, Iran basically has inherited about $700 million back to them from frozen assets. So this is not a big deal for them to concede. We can drag this out as long as we can go because Iran's government, that is the terrorist government, is getting richer. And in fact, I was looking on Facebook a couple of minutes before the program today. There was a posting about a man in Iran who is going to be put to death because he, quote unquote, as a Facebook activist, insulted the prophet. And underneath the posting of this incident, my good friend Gil Gillespie, who is also a human rights activist, had a very insightful thing to say in regard to this post that I think sums up the attitude that all of us have about these nuclear talks. She says, quote, "The idiots in the White House hand the Iranian regime billions of dollars on a plate for absolutely no nuclear concessions and ignore their human rights atrocities. The regime continue to go about their business torturing and murdering innocents for trying to defend their right to life and free speech." Exactly right, Gil. We sit in front of this government handing them billions of dollars back in frozen assets, and they continue to murder and torture their people. The human rights violations in Iran are astronomical. And you know by listening to my broadcast just what it's like. I do my best to describe them to you. But again, Gill is exactly right. The issue of human rights should be at the forefront of these negotiations. The issue of Saeed Abedini and Amir Hekmati being returned should be the precondition. And instead, we give them money again and again for relief in sanctions. Now, as far as this government goes, they should be so severely punished. The problem with the sanction thing is that my friends suffer horribly economically and physically because of the sanctions. So while I want to see this government punished and held accountable, I also want to see my friends out from underneath the weight of what they're carrying every day because of the sanctions. It's a double-edged sword for me. Just yesterday, Lisa Daftari was on Fox News talking with Eric Shawn. Lisa Daftari is the Middle East reporter for happenings in the Middle East on Fox News. She's a contributor and had a lot of good insight about this nuclear deal negotiations. Of course, this report was filed a couple of days ago before the deadline today. And as I mentioned, the deadline ends with a stalemate. They're going to continue on through next year having these talks without addressing the real issues. But I want you to hear this very insightful report by Lisa Daftari right now on the Cross in the Desert.
Be stopped from being able to potentially build a nuclear bomb. You know, they refuse to stop enriching uranium. They refuse to any major cutbacks in its program. And they have even blocked UN inspectors from a military complex suspected of having worked on potential nuclear explosions. Well, Secretary of State John Kerry is meeting in Vienna with Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, warning, though, that there are still, quote, serious gaps in those high-level talks, and the deadline for a permanent agreement is Monday. Lisa Daftari, journalist covering the Middle East and a Fox News contributor, joins us now. So, Lisa, they have like 48 hours to go. What do you think is going to happen?
Right, so the deadline is Monday, so we can see one of two scenarios playing out. Either there will be an extension, as many people are predicting, or we're going to go forward with what looks like a very bad deal.
What does it mean if there's an extension?
Well, it means that they're just, for Iran, it means a very good thing. It's very good news. They have more time, as what they've wanted, to carry out their nuclear program. Now, let's look at what a good deal with Iran would look like. It's meant to do three things. That's first, to curb their behavior back at home. And we've seen what? An increase in the number of executions in Iran. So we haven't seen that. A curbing in their behavior in the region. And what have we seen? They're still pulling the puppet strings in Syria. And lastly, and most importantly, we'd want them to curb their nuclear activity and to stop their nuclear program from going forward. And we haven't obviously seen that. So an extension would only allow Iran to continue playing out the clock and to continue with their program and their bad behavior.
What would be a bad deal? What are you worried about?
Well, it looks like a bad deal is just surrendering to what Iran has continued to do. Look, Iran can easily say, yes, we agree to X amount of uranium. But what good is that when we don't know what the entire program looks like? This is a facade of a deal.
You know, talk about uranium enrichment. The United Nations Security Council six times has demanded and said stop enriching uranium, and they refuse. So why should we trust anything they say?
Right, and the latest IAEA report came out is that the Iranians are, A, not complying with the investigators that are over there trying to figure out the program, and B, that the only thing that's very apparent is that they have taken their program forward. And most importantly, and what people have to really recognize here, is that the human rights abuses, both back at home, the number of executions, and not to mention our two Americans still being held there. And our administration has not made that to ask and demand that these Americans be released. That has not been a part.
And those Americans are?
This is Pastor Saeed Abedini, and we have Marine Amir Hekmati. Two Americans held in the prisons of Iran. And again, the people of Iran, we have over 70 million people, also prisoners to this regime and the human rights abuses going on there. These topics should all be a part of the talks going forward with Iran. They should be all a part of curbing their behavior. And instead, what we've seen is the world, the U.S. and the world community is changing our behavior and accepting what Iran is doing.
Do you worry about any type of concessions at the last minute in order to try to get a deal? They'll say, look, we'll give you X, Y, and Z, and they won't follow through on their side of the bargain.
It actually looks like that's what's going to happen. If
really?
This deal is pushed forward before Monday, mm-hmm. it looks as though the U.S. and the P5 plus one, they don't want to upset the deal. They don't want anything to go wrong. So they will not ask Iran for full and open disclosure of their program.
I mean, that's unbelievable because they're saying, well, we don't want to have a bomb. We want to have it for peaceful purposes. But you can't prove it because they're not letting the U.N. inspectors into Parchin, and that's the military facility that supposedly had some research on nuclear explosive devices.
Right. We're not asking, and they're not going to have a deal
if it's like this, if it's, you only see part of
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. We're not asking, and they're not telling.
So bottom line, you worry most that they will come out of a deal that potentially could still let Iran build a nuclear
Absolutely.
Bomb.
Absolutely. The only winners in this deal will be the Iranian regime. We're seeing a loss for the Iranian people, for the stability and the security of the region and the global community as a whole.
And if Secretary of State Kerry comes out waving the agreement and the Obama administration says, look what we have, what about Congress? What do they say?
Well, Congress is extremely worried that exactly Kerry and Obama will try to push this forward without congressional approval. But you know what? Congress, there's been bipartisan support to keep sanctions, to keep pressure on Iran, and we're going to see trouble there. We have lawmakers on both sides. Senator Kirk, who I interviewed this week, he's warning Congress. He put together a letter with Senator Rubio warning the president from going forward without congressional support on this.
And finally, because of a Republican Senate, it could be tougher?
It's going to be absolutely tougher. Again, we have bipartisan support. A lot of people, most sane people, think that this is a very bad idea, but we have Secretary Kerry, President Obama, opting for a bad deal in favor of just having any deal.
Well, we'll see if there is a bad deal or if there's a good deal. Or even if there's a deal, or maybe no deal, then they'll keep on talking for a potential deal. Lisa Dakari, it goes on and on. Thank you so much,
My
as
pleasure.
Always, for your analysis.
Lisa Daftari, contributor to Fox News on the Middle East, some insightful words exactly on the money. Iran wins no matter what, and yet they will not stop oppressing their people. These are the issues, as Lisa pointed out, that should be at the forefront of these nuclear negotiations. And as we have found out, it's a stalemate. They're going to continue to extend this out through next year, through July. They have some kind of sunset agreement that this could go on. It will finally lapse in 10 years. Who knows exactly what's going on? But as Lisa pointed out, inspectors are not allowed to look at this program in Iran. They won't allow people to have hands-on, eyes-on view of their program. So why should we even think about sitting down and agreeing with them on anything when they oppress their people, when they commit atrocious human rights violations, when they hold two Americans hostage, Amir and Saeed, and it continues to go on. And what has Iran gained from this stalemate? More relief of sanctions. As I pointed out, over $700 million in frozen assets returned to them. It seems like they're the winners, and Iranians, my dear friends, are once again the losers. I want to play for you a very important little soundbite here that's very insightful on this whole nuclear negotiation and program. This is from the movie Iranium. It's some bonus footage. Iranium is a really important film that shows and exposes the intent of the Iranian regime and the nuclear program. And I have this film at home, and I think it was really well put together. Claire Lopez is a former CIA officer, and she's now the vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's also on the committee to investigate the happenings of Benghazi, a very intelligent woman. And about 3 years ago, this is what she had to say about the Iranian regime and their nuclear ambitions. Let's listen to it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
It is the policy of the Iranian government to attack and kill Americans wherever and whenever they possibly can. This is playing out in Iraq through the preferred method used by the Iranian government, which is through proxies. And so we see them using Shiite, Sunni militias, terror militias inside of Iraq to do the attack specifically, but they are trained by the IRGC and the Quds Force. They are trained by Hezbollah, another terror proxy of Iran. Towards the end of the 1980s war between Iran and Iraq, Iran's military leadership knew that it was losing the war, and it went to Ayatollah Khomeini and said, "We're not winning this thing." Khomeini said, "Get me a bomb." Khomeini ordered his commanders of the IRGC to get an atomic weapon, is what he called it at that time. And from that point forward, the IRGC has been in control of the development of Iran's nuclear weapons program. As a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, as a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, Iran comes under the authority of the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. And as such, they are obligated to disclose all of their nuclear development sites. The fact that they have not done so and did not do so for the entire length of their nuclear weapons program is testament to the duplicity with which Iran has dealt with the international community. This is a regime which repeatedly has threatened the State of Israel, its United Nations fellow member, with genocide, with wiping Israel off the face of the map. This is a regime whose constitution commits it to the export of revolution and jihad throughout the world. This is a regime which has supported terrorism and terrorist organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah since the beginning of the regime, 30-some years ago now. This is a regime which has coordinated with terrorist organizations, Hezbollah, with Al-Qaeda, to mount attacks not just against the United States, but other members of the United Nations, of other countries across the world. This is a regime which oppresses, savagely oppresses its own people inside its own borders. So a regime like this, to get a deliverable nuclear weapon, is a serious danger. It is an existential danger to Israel. It is a national security danger for the United States of America. To allow Iran to become a nuclear weapons power without stopping it will be to the detriment of American national security as well as Israel.
Some very powerful and insightful words from Claire Lopez. Claire Lopez was a former CIA officer, and she is currently Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy and is also on the committee investigating Benghazi, a woman that really understands, who really looks at things objectively, and she has exactly enunciated what this regime is all about. I can't go over those points. We've gone over them many times before. But what she says is backed up almost by every human rights activist, by the UN Special Rapporteur, Ahmed Saeed, who has a book length of reports of human rights violations committed by the Iranian regime. What Claire says is so important, and it is very important that we listen carefully to her words. Why would we sit down with a terrorist regime and try to negotiate when they would have a nuclear device? You know what they would do. And yet they will lie, they will deceive, they will do everything they can to get out from underneath the pile of economic sanctions that they're dealing with. And that is the number one reason they're coming to the table. And more they're getting their way, as we have seen even today, as these talks will now be extended out through next year. So I just ask you, as a listener to The Cross in the Desert, please pray for our country. Please pray that our administration would get tough, would have the right insight, would have wisdom to deal forthrightly with the Iranian regime. Please pray for my Iranian friends who suffer economically because of their pursuit of their nuclear ambitions. Some other news happening in the world. If you've been following The Cross in the Desert and also been on my Facebook page, you've seen postings about Ganeshe Gavami, the young 25-year-old British-Iranian who was arrested this past June and put in Evin prison in solitary confinement because she attended a men's volleyball match back in June of this year. Well, I guess this would be some good news. And I want to read this report to you because a lot of you don't know the story behind Ghanashe. So if you'll bear with me, I want to read this report from the BBC about the latest happenings with Ghanashe. Miss Ghavami was freed because of health problems and was staying with her parents in Tehran awaiting a decision by the Court of Appeal, they said. So she has been released because of health problems, and she has to stay in Tehran with her parents. She's not allowed to leave the country. I think she's been banned for 2 years. Miss Ghavami, 25, was part of a group of women arrested after trying to watch the match on June the 20th. Iranian prosecutors have since accused her of having links to the opposition. Ms. Ghavami staged a hunger strike during her detention while hundreds of thousands of people signed a petition calling for her release. Her brother, Imam Ghavami, told the BBC NewsHour that, quote, parents who were in Iran had wanted to ask for a full medical checkup because Ms. Ghavami had intestinal problems. Well, that's understandable when you're a prisoner at Evin prison. Ms. Ghavami said his sister had served 5 months of a one-year sentence and that the release was quite unexpected, but a welcome move. Everyone is happy, my parents, my sister. There are many possibilities. We're not sure what's going to happen, but we hope for the best outcome. And for the time being, her 26th birthday is tomorrow morning, and so that's a good birthday present. She can at least celebrate that she's out of Evin prison temporarily until her course goes through the appeal courts. But listen, Iran's Sharaka newspaper said on its Twitter account, quote, that she was released after paying a bail amounting to $38,000, really, in American money. So Ms. Ghavami and the other woman were arrested and allegedly beaten after attempting to watch Iran play Italy in this volleyball match. They were later freed, but Ghanashe was rearrested later and subsequently put on trial. It's such a sad thing, but Iran has banned women from men's volleyball games beginning in 2012, and there has been an outrage amongst the Volleyball Association all over the world that basically has said the Federal Volleyball Association has said to Iran, if you don't change this rule, if you don't change this rule and free Ghanashe, you will be banned as the host country. And so there has been international pressure put on. We don't know exactly all the reasons why she was released, but it is good news for her. We're very thankful that she's out of that prison, at least temporarily, and that her case has been under review. That is good news for Ghanashe, but continue, I believe you should continue to pray and sign the petition and speak out for this young girl who has went through so very much in Evin prison. And anyone that has been there will tell you how deplorable the conditions really, really are. I want to read to you a statement that just really touched my heart. It's from Senator Linda Frum. She is in Canada, in Parliament there. And I wanted to read this statement that she made concerning Rehana Jabari. You remember Rehana Jabari was executed just about a month ago simply because she defended herself against a rape attack. A very, very sad, sad day for all of us human rights activists. But this is the statement in the Senate by the Honorable Linda Frum, remembering Rehana Jabari. I just thought it was worth reading to you because she had so many good words to say concerning Rehana. Honorable Senators, I rise today to remember Rehana Jabari, a 26-year-old woman hanged 3 weeks ago in Iran, and to condemn the Iran regime's brutal and arbitrary so-called judicial system. Ms. Jabari was arrested 7 years ago and found guilty in 2009 of murder, despite her contention that she stabbed the deceased in self-defense when he tried to rape her. The United Nations Rapporteur for Human Rights urged a review of her trial by Iranian authorities and a retrial. He wrote, quote, Ms. Jabari's case raises serious due process concerns, particularly with regard to her interrogation and the reluctance of the court to take into account all relevant circumstantial evidence unto its judgment, quote, unquote. According to this UN official, reliable sources say that the victim, Mr. Sarbandi, quote, arranged to take Ms. Jabari to his office, but instead took her to a residence where he physically and sexually forced himself upon her. Ms. Jabbar reportedly stabbed Mr. Sorbandi in the shoulder in self-defense, fled for safety, and called for an ambulance out of concern for her alleged attacker. After her arrest, there was tremendous international outcry about Rahana Jabari's show trial, her probable torture, and her unjust death sentence. President Rouhani claimed that his government tried to get her sentence repealed, making the laughable assertion that the Iranian government has no control over the judiciary, but the death sentence held. Further, the victim's family declined to show mercy to Ms. Jabari, as allowed for under Iranian law. Many questions surround Ms. Jabari's alleged guilt and the fairness of her trial, but there is no question that the Iranian regime has murdered as many as 967 people since August 2013, according to the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center. That is an astounding number, second only to China's judicial death toll and the highest rate per capita in the world. Ottawa human rights activist Shabnam Sadli suggests that Iran is using the rise in executions, persecution, and human rights violations for political purposes as it seeks to influence the Obama administration to relieve sanctions and permit concessions to allow Iran to continue acquiring a nuclear weapons capability. Unfortunately, this scenario seems only too plausible. I am sure all senators will join me in condemning the hanging of Rahana Jabari, as well as Iran's ongoing judicial brutalization of its citizens. Thank you so much, Honorable Linda from the state of Canada, for these wonderful words concerning Rahana Jabari. In my new book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran, right on the front cover is a picture of Rahana Jabari. I dedicated this book to Rahana. There are two stories in the book about Rahana's case. And I just echo the words of Senator Frum, how deplorable and how outrageous this trial was. And I join with many, many human rights activists and families all over the world in sadness and mourning this beautiful girl's death, this unjust murder of Rahana Jabari. Well, we're speaking about the way women are treated in Iran, and I want to go right now to International Women's Day. Tomorrow, November 25th, is International Women's Day to end the violence done against women. And I want to play to you this quick little soundbite from Michelle Bachelet on International Women's Day and what it's all about right here on The Cross in the Desert.
I'm often asked whether ending violence against women is possible, given the pervasiveness and persistence of these crimes. My answer is yes, it is possible, but we can only do it together. We are all responsible, and it is time for leaders to fulfill the promises made to women. Last year, UN Women launched the 16-step policy agenda. Today, on the International Day to End Violence Against Women, I urge all heads of state and government to make new commitments and take strong action in their countries to end violence against women and girls. The first step has been taken. The silence has been broken. We have come a long way together with laws, policies, and programs. There are international agreements and treaties, and greater knowledge than ever before on ending violence against women. But it's not enough. Governments and leaders must lead by example. Now is the time for governments to translate international promises into concrete national action. And we hope to see new and improved laws and national action plans that provide for safe houses, free hotline services, and free legal and medical aid to women victims of violence and their children. We count on education programs that teach human rights, equality, and mutual respect. We need increasing numbers of women in politics, law enforcement, and peacekeeping forces. We need equal economic opportunities and decent jobs for women. And we need real implementation of agreements and treaties. All of these actions require decisive and courageous leaders. As more and more people believe that violence against women is neither acceptable nor inevitable, as more and more perpetrators are punished, ending violence against women becomes possible. This is not just a women's issue. This is a responsibility for all of us. This violence is an outrage, and it must be stopped. There can be no peace, no progress, when women live under the fear of violence. Time has run out for complacency or excuses. All around the world, in all countries, there are millions of people, men and women, in government, civil society, and the private sector, with the will and determination to end violence against women. Yes, it is possible. Together, we can stop the violence.
Tomorrow is Tuesday, November 25th. You should wear orange to draw attention to this most important issue. It's the International Women's Day, November 25th, to stop and end the violence against women. Now, just a few days ago, I found this so beautiful. Just a few days ago in Washington, D.C., there was a mobile billboard campaign in support of Iranian women's rights. And I want to read this article to you because it speaks so importantly to this issue we're talking about now in the segment of my program today, the rights of women, and especially today, the rights of women in Iran. I want you to hear this article. I'll read it to you. Since the inception of the Islamic Republic, that was back in February of 1979, the government of Iran and its instrumentalities have worked systematically to institutionalize oppression of and discrimination against Iranian women. As a result, throughout the past 3.5 decades, Iranian women have been subjected to countless acts of violence and injustice. Women's rights issues in Iran have gendered unique focus in the last few months due to certain recent events, including the execution of Rahana Jabari, a 26-year-old woman sentenced to death for killing a man who attempted to rape her. Also in recent weeks, several Iranian women were brutalized in a series of public acid attacks carried out as part of the intimidation campaign intended to achieve strict compliance with the Islamic Republic's laws regarding female dress and appearance. While the affiliations of the perpetrators of these acid attacks are not clear, such events are the legal environment within which women are the targets of immeasurable oppression and discrimination based on their gender. To make matters worse, where such oppression and discrimination are not matters of formal policy, but occur outside the bounds of Iranian law, the Islamic Republic routinely fails to provide or actively denies Iranian women the protection that is their most basic human right, leaving Iranian women all the more vulnerable to both official and unofficial acts of mistreatment and abuse. Now, this is dated a few days. On Wednesday of last week, in recognition of the dire state of human rights in Iran, and with particular attention to the constant theme of injustice against women in Iran, a coalition of human rights activists from a variety of organizations and the Coalition and Justice Through Music will carry out a mobile billboard campaign in Washington, D.C. Trucks depicting billboards with images and messages designed to raise awareness of and draw support for the women's rights movement in Iran, as well as broader concerns regarding human rights in Iran, will travel through the city's capital streets. This is amazing. This is wonderful. This billboard campaign took place a few days ago, and on one of the billboards was a picture of Rahana Jabari at the podium defending herself at the trial, and it reads, "In Iran, a woman can get the death penalty for resisting rape." That's what happened to Rahana Jabari, executed on 10-25-14. Underneath it, it says, hashtag, support women's rights in Iran. This was one of the billboard posters, and it should have gotten attention. Well, speaking of women's rights in Iran, I want to take you to a short interview from Mondazan Irvin. She appeared in the film, the documentary film, Iranium. And she talks about the history of women's rights in Iran, beginning with the establishment of the Islamic Republic back in 1979. Let's listen to her as she has some really great insights on the history of the oppression of women in Iran. We're going to hear it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
one of the wars that Khomeini had with the Shah was about the equal rights for women. By 1972, we were more equal than American women or European women were. But 1979 came and Khomeini came along and took everything away, and we went back to 1907. I was the first woman to become the managing director at the Customs Administration in Iran, trying to change things, computerize and modernize the Customs Administration. One of the first things that Khomeini's regime did, they purified the government of women. And so I was put aside. And my father kept telling me, you better leave the country because they're going to come after you. They're not going to like the women who have been in charge, who can think for themselves. And at that time, my high school teacher, who had become the Secretary of Education, had already been executed by them. So I left the country with my daughter. And my father said, take the first flight out, no matter where it goes to, just out of this country. So I went. 2 days later, when I called home, my mother told me that they had come home for my arrest. My neck was saved within 2 days. And so many other women like me. Let's do the list of what the Khomeini did. First, he removed all the women's rights and pushed Iran back into Sharia laws for family. 50% of the population of Iran became nothing. The Iranian women have no rights now. Iranian women have no right choice of their clothing. They don't have custody of their children. They do not have. They can't divorce their husbands. They can't, their husbands can marry whatever and whoever they want to. They cannot choose where they live. They cannot choose to travel. They cannot choose to go to school or even step out of the house. These are the laws of the country against women. The media says, well, okay, they push their hijabs and, you know, the women of Iran do this, that, do that. That's not a big deal. The deal is, if a man wants to keep a woman in a pantry and close the door, they can. It's the law of the country. It's the law that the woman cannot do anything without her husband's permission. It's the law that the custody is given to the father. These are the laws of the country that is important. The scarf a little further up or down, that's not what I'm talking about when I talk about when we women of Iran talk about the human rights of women. The human rights, the actual rights that gives humanity to the human, that the will, the personal will, or freedom of choice for a human being are taken away from them by the law of the land. Not by the wish of a man, by the law of the land. And when you go to the court, there is not a lawyer to defend you. There is a clergy sitting there applying the Sharia law on the women, even if they accept to let you go to the court. So this is the most important issue, that the human rights of 50% of the population. The only thing that should be, it's humane, and it's to the benefit of the world and the people of Iran, is to get rid of this regime. Get rid of the regime, the Islamic regime in Iran, and make the people of Iran forever indebted to whoever gets rid of this regime or whoever that supports them in their quest to get rid of this regime and have a democratic, legal, free society and government, who doesn't want to get into war with anybody, who doesn't need nuclear bomb, doesn't need any missiles of any kind. They just want to live in peace and harmony with the rest of the world. All we need to do is change this regime, and changing this regime, we can support the people of Iran to do it.
You're listening to the very powerful and instructive words from Amanda Zan Irvin. She's a human rights activist, Iranian human rights activist. She's featured in the movie Iranium, a very important, powerful documentary exposing the nuclear ambitions of Iran. But it has some bonus issues, some bonus features, that is, featuring segments like the one you just heard. Very important to understand in light of what tomorrow represents. International Women's Day, stop the violence against women. And to do that, wear orange, to draw attention to the issue of women's rights. When I think of women, women's rights, there's one person that automatically comes to my mind. She is really a prophet for human rights, religious freedom all over the world, and I'm speaking of Nagma Abedini, the wife of Saeed Abedini. Do you know, these discussions broke down today, and not again. Once again, Saeed was not brought to the bargaining table. He was not mentioned. The issues of human rights and religious freedom was not mentioned. And once again, Nagma has to endure the pain of not having her husband home with her. Her children have to suffer the agony of not seeing dad again. Not once was Saeed mentioned at the bargaining table. In spite of that, Nagma has some important things for us to hear. She had a posting, and I want you to hear this, and then I'm going to play an important video featuring Nagma. Nagma writes on her Facebook, "So I have been hiding in my shell for the last few days. I cannot seem to hold back the tears, really missing Saeed, wondering when Saeed will come home. Seems like a dream to have Saeed home for Christmas. The kids have been longing for his touch. My son has been looking at pictures of Daddy holding him and kissing him. I can see the longing in their eyes for that touch of their dad. It is so hard to watch as a mom. Some days seem so hard and such a struggle. What does the future hold? The anticipations, the hopes, the disappointments. I remember a prayer that I have prayed since I was a child. I had longed to please my father, and so I would pray for faith, because I had read that that is what pleases God. Today, I decided to let go and trust God again, to have faith, to believe in him. I felt the heaviness leave and a new sense of hope and joy fill my heart. I don't know what the future holds or how much longer this trial will drag on, but I know the God I can trust. He has never failed. He has been with me and Saeed every step of the way." And then Nagma quotes from Hebrews chapter 11, verses 32 through 38. I want you to hear from Nagma herself on this beautiful, powerful video entitled Thriving Through the Storm, right here on the Cross in the Desert.
Every morning I get up and my husband's not there, and I know he's being tortured in an Iranian prison. My kids are crying, they're missing their dad, you know. Anniversaries and birthdays or Christmases are passing by without him. That's painful. When I learned about Saeed's arrest, one of my worst fears happened. I became a single mom. I felt like I finally connected to the vine, and I was able to abide in Jesus, and I was freed from all fear. I discovered Jesus in such an intimate way that I knew if I lost everything, if I lost my husband, if I lost my kids, I knew I'd be okay. I knew I would be more than okay. I knew I'd have joy and peace. And I knew that nothing in the world could take that away from me. Before that, I didn't know that. I always thought, what bad news is going to destroy my life and I'm going to be a wreck? And now I know I can be a wreck for a second, for a few moments, but I can go to his presence. I've discovered that source. I've learned how to get to connect to that vine, and so I just know where to go and be refreshed and renewed and get my strength, and so I'm not afraid of anything. when I learned about Saeed's arrest. It was just the hardest week of my life. We didn't even know if he was alive or dead. Saeed called his parents in Tehran. He said, I'm okay. I'm in Evin prison. I'm in solitary. I couldn't understand even his first move to the exile prison. Lord, why? Why would you send him to this exile prison where he was sent to the murder ward? He had lice. He was suffering. He could barely walk. And I could say, Lord, why would you send him there? And then I started hearing testimonies of people getting saved. And I thought, okay, Lord, it's worth it. If it's one person, then it's worth Saeed being in that prison. I see the storms of life, and we all, God in His goodness, has allowed for all of us to experience some kind of trial, be it relationships, economy, I don't know, work, money. We thrive in the storms because we're like trees planted by the water. We just dig deeper. The deeper you dig, because the storm is hard, the worse news, the better, I think, and in a way that you have to dig deeper. And so you dig deeper, of course, what do you get? You get more peace, you get more joy, you get more love, you just get more of Him. So you thrive in the storm. We should actually embrace suffering. One of my favorite verses is 2 Corinthians 12. Paul says, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in distress, in need, in persecution. He's taking pleasure because when he's weak, and God is strong. As a child, when I accepted Christ, I would say, if this is either real or not, if it's not, I'd rather just live my life. But if Christ is real, I would give my life. And, trial is the time where you can just dig deeper and realize our life is so short. I have to realize, okay, Saeed's missing birthdays and Christmases. In a few years, I'll be gone. My life is just a short. And, and if it's spent in glorifying God, then it's worth it.
It's just a very powerful testimony from a very courageous woman. And, of course, I'm speaking of Nagma Abedini. She describes the incredible trial she's going through. Nagma's story is an incredible story. In fact, I have two very important postings in my new book about Nagma and her story, The Cross in the Desert, my new book. And it's called Embracing Your Trials, which you just mentioned there. And most of us, when we hear trials that are painful psychologically and sometimes physically, we want to run instead of embrace. But Nagma has embraced this trial and this suffering and has stood firm. And as she mentioned, thriving in the storm, planting your roots deep into God every day and facing every day, trusting in Him. And she is a great testimony of grace under pressure. And we continue to pray for Saeed and Amir, continue to pray for Nagma and Rebecca and Jacob as they thrive through this real, real storm. Unless our roots are deep in the sovereignty and the faithfulness of God and trusting in Him, we will be washed away, blown away by every wind, by every storm. Right now, I want to feature an incredibly new song from Chris Tomlin's newest CD called Love Ran Red. It's a story of the greatness, the almightiness, the faithfulness of God. We've heard so much about the oppression of Iranian women and oppression of Iranians in this program, Breath of Fresh Air, and Talk About Almighty. This is Chris Tomlin right now on The Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
You have no rival, you stand alone. The heavens worship before your throne. There is no one like you. You have no equal. Your kingdom reigns. Yours is the highest of every name. There is no one like you. Almighty, we stand in
Of our God. That's Chris Tomlin from his newest CD, Love Ran Red, and a song called Almighty. In the last few minutes of this program, I want to quote from my newest book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. We just heard from Negma Abedini. I want to read to you this story I wrote about Negma, talking about embracing your trials. But before I do that, I want to read this short little letter, email from my friend in Iran who was a Christian. And she wrote, after listening to my program about Saeed, here's what she wrote, quote, "I just heard your radio program, Randy. It made me sad because I realized how indifferent I am. And I have no fault because when you live here, you learn that if you want to stay safe, you have to be indifferent. The problems here are too much. We citizens are drawn into so many problems, and yet we don't dare complain. We do not dare to defend innocent people in prison like Saeed. We have to remain silent and just watch. I pray for this innocent man. I pray for his freedom. May God bring freedom for all of us. Amen." My beautiful Christian friend in Iran, standing up and not forgetting Saeed. Negma writes in my book, this is a story I wrote about her, and it's such an important story. It's a lesson for all of us about trials. She says that suffering and trials come out all the time in our lives, and the question is, how will we respond to him? How will we respond to our trials? Enigma says that we should embrace our trials. And most of us, if we were honest, would rebel at such a proposition. It's human nature to want to run from trials and avoid them. Trials interrupt our comfort zone, creating chaos and fear. And our first reaction is to run from them, not embrace them. Well, Enigma was a guest on my radio program this past August and then the year before. And on that program, she talked about firsthand what trials and tribulations are all about, understands that firsthand, as you can well imagine. And she has been all over the world speaking out for religious freedom, speaking out for her husband. And she says we should embrace our trials instead of running from them. When we embrace our trials, Negative writes, our faith and endurance will grow. This will be a great testimony to the watching world of the power of Christ in our lives. We can be an encouragement and an example to others what the Word of God is doing in our lives when we embrace our trials. This is what James teaches in chapter 1, verses 2 through 3. When trouble comes your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For when you know that your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Consider it an opportunity for great joy, James. Why? It's painful. Well, James gives us the reason. When your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Trials perfect our faith and draw us closer to dependence on God. Without trials, our faith would have no opportunity to grow. Let's face it, trials reveal if our faith is genuine. And for the Christian, that is a very important test to pass. Well, what does it say about Jesus? Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. On the night before his suffering, Jesus prayed, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Well, Jesus understood what he was about to bear, the sins of the world, the wrath of God, taking our place as a sinless Savior. Jesus didn't run away from his trial. He embraced it. He did this for our salvation. He says of God, yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Jesus submitted to his trial. He embraced it. The result was our salvation. And of Enigma, she is a beautiful example of Jesus. She has embraced her trials, knowing God has a purpose and plan for her suffering. She is, like I've said before, an example of grace under pressure. No matter what your trial is, submit to God. Embrace it. Trust in God's power and grace and faithfulness. It will perfect your faith. It will cause you to grow. And yes, it is painful, but God never gives us more than we can endure and bear. He is sovereign over us. He is compassionate. He is full of love and full of grace. And he will strengthen us and perfect us and to cause us to shine like gold once we have passed through this trial. Whatever trial you're facing today, give it to the greatness of God. Give it to God. He will perfect you through it. Trust him through this. He will give you grace to face it. He will perfect your faith, and you will shine like the universe once you have passed through this trial. I wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving. I pray that you have a great time with your family. Thank you so much for taking time out today to join me on the cross in the desert. I will see you in 1 week. God bless you, and have a wonderful holiday.
Healing.